Hey guys.
Hello, everybody.
Today you might have seen on the Instagram stories, but today we're going to do a Q&A. So, and Q&A / like advice. So yeah, it's really fun, you know, answering everybody's questions specifically. Like a lot of people have specific scenarios that they have questions about. So it's very fun to do this. And I feel like a lot of people like it too. People are constantly like asking us questions in our DMs. So,
yeah, and there's a lot of DMs, so we'll be able to answer people directly, I guess, or like more exclusively through this episode. Also, I want to mention I've been sharing a lot on the page, so a lot of you guys may know this, but I have some sort of weird cold going on, so my voice does sound weird, but if I cough in the background, I'll try to edit it out. But if it happens, it happens. We'll see.
Yeah. Do you want to just jump right in?
Yeah, you can go first.
Okay. Somebody asked, how do you feel in public? So I think they're asking, like, do we get anxious when we're in public? And
wait, like how did they word the question?
They said, how do you feel when in public?
Okay. So yeah, like how do we, I guess, manage everything in public?
Yeah. Okay. I feel like personally for me, it depends on the situation. Like sometimes I'm not anxious in public at all. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I am. I think if I'm like somewhere new or I'm trying to think, like I went to I don't know if everyone knows who this is, but I went to a Kevin Hart show. He's like a
comedian. Oh, everyone knows Kevin Hart.
Well, I don't know. And I was, like, a little bit anxious there because, I mean, it's a huge – we were in a stadium, but, you know, there's a lot of people. And then plus, it's, like, you're just sitting there. So, I feel like – so if I feel like I can't – like, I'm trapped, then I get anxious. Like, sometimes when I'm getting my nails done my hair done.
When you got your eyelashes done, too.
Yeah. I was just laying there for an hour with my eyes closed, but – yeah, I think it just depends on the situation. Like, if I'm going to the grocery store or, I don't know, then I'm fine. But also in those situations, I have my things. Like, I have water, I have gum, I have...
That's all the necessities.
Yeah, just all the things that I like when I get anxious. So, yeah, it just definitely depends on the situation.
It depends for me as well. I guess if I'm having, like, an anxious day to begin with, mm-hmm. or if I feel off for some reason, then I will get more anxious about, like, going to public. Even going to, like, the grocery store, I may get anxious about that. But other days, I'm, like, able to go down to the club and be totally fine. Yeah. It really just depends on the day and how I feel. But I think all that depends on, I guess, self-affirmation and just reminding yourself that no matter what happens, you're going to be okay. I don't really worry about others. Like, I know a lot of people with emetophobia struggle with the thought of possibly running into someone else who gets sick in public, but that never even crosses my mind.
Yeah, that doesn't really cross my mind either.
I don't think I've ever really seen someone get sick in public, so it can happen, but it's so rare.
Yeah, I feel like that'd be such, like, a coincidence type of thing that, yeah, I don't really think about it.
What are the
it.
Odds?
Yeah.
But if you, like, I have my Zofran on me at all times. I try not to take it, but it's a safety blanket, I guess, for me. It really just depends.
Yeah. Well, also, like, if someone were, like, let's say you're at the grocery store and someone got sick, like, you're not gonna get sick just because you're, like, in the same grocery store as them, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't really think about that much.
Yeah. Anyway, the next question, I think this one's a good question because it's kind of like an overview of everything. But the best way to challenge the emetophobia in your experience. So I think this is good because this is literally like the main reason on how to get over emetophobia is by challenging yourself. Mm-hmm. And Maddie and I were literally just talking about this, but I don't think you can really get over any sort of fear or phobia without putting yourself in uncomfortable positions. And, like, pushing yourself past your extent that you think you have, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how else to say it. But, yeah, my best advice would be literally just pushing yourself and doing the most uncomfortable things you can do. Of course, baby steps. You don't want to go all out at once or else you'll burn yourself out. But, you know, go to the store or go, I don't know, to a concert and slowly branch out.
Yeah. Well, I think I definitely agree with that. I mean, that's the biggest way that I've improved is, like, just doing slowly doing things that make me uncomfortable and that, you know, make me nervous. And then just doing them over and over until I'm more comfortable with it and realizing that I'm going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Like going on an airplane or even smaller things. Yeah, it's honestly, you just have to push yourself and you have to learn to be okay with being uncomfortable. And that's like the hardest thing. I think programs like the Thrive programs or like reading other books can be helpful for you to understand, you know, how your emetophobia came about or and all that stuff. But I think really the only way to improve your emetophobia or possibly get over it is the exposure therapy, which that's what putting yourself in uncomfortable situations is. It's a lot of people get scared that it's, you know, making yourself throw up, and it's not that at all. It's just anything that makes you nervous, doing it. And mm-hmm. seeing that, you know, you were okay and you're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Before we go on to the next question, I have a good scenario for this. So in my freshman year of high school, I didn't go to school for 2 years because I was way too scared. My emetophobia was cycling out of control. It had complete control over my entire life. And the way that I got out of that, I mean, I was literally didn't leave my house for a couple months straight, not even to go to the store, not even to go on a walk. And the best or the only way that I got out of that cycle was by going to the store maybe once a week with my mom. And then after I felt comfortable doing that, I would go on a beach walk, which was like 20 minutes away from my house with my mom. And then once I got comfortable doing that, I'd invite some of my friends over that I haven't seen in like a year. Mm-hmm. And then just slowly going out. And that's literally the only way that I was able to get myself out of that dark hole. So I think that is really important.
And it's like you can start super, super, super small. Like, mm-hmm. for example, when I started my anxiety medication, and this isn't necessarily about the medication, but when I started it, I was so scared to start it because of the side effects and whatever that I got prescribed a 10 milligram tablet. And in the medication I take, the highest you can go is 20. So I got prescribed a 10 milligram tablet. I cut it into quarters. It was literally a sliver of a piece. It was 2.5 milligrams. And I took that for like a week. And it didn't do anything. Like, that's not enough medicine to even do anything. But it just, I was scared to take it. So I did that. And eventually now I'm taking 20 milligrams. But yeah, it's just like even the tiniest things that really won't make a difference, they do.
They really do, yeah. Like whatever you can do.
Reassuring your brain. So, all right. Next question. Somebody asked, how to not be anxious when siblings have a sick bug? Mine have one at the moment and it's so hard.
I don't know. This one's hard. This one is really hard. I would say this is my biggest fear within emetophobia other than actually getting sick myself.
Yeah, like someone you live with.
Yeah.
Having a stomach bug. I feel like that's scary because then it's kind of just like, it feels like it'd be like a waiting game until mm-hmm. you get it. Luckily, knock on wood, I haven't dealt with that.
Me neither.
You know, my boyfriend throws up sometimes, but it's never like a stomach bug. But I think the only thing you can do to prevent yourself from getting it is to, you know, clean every surface and, disinfect and all those things. Wash your hands. I think that's the most important thing is wash your hands.
Mm-hmm.
I think mentally that's tough. I don't know. This is going to sound so bad, but I feel like you have to try to accept the fact that you might get sick.
Yeah, it's a possibility. And like
that's so hard, but if you accept it and then you tell yourself, like, I might get sick, but I will be okay. Like, I'll get through it. I'll be okay. It might suck, but, you know, after that happens, like, my life will just go on as normal. And it's it's so hard to fully believe that. And I don't even fully believe that, but I tell myself that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just reassuring yourself and telling yourself a million times over that it's okay if you get sick and it's going to suck and it's going to be scary, but you'll get through it. Yeah, but I think really the only thing you can do is like clean surfaces and wash your hands.
Yeah, take precautions. This reminds me of when the little boy I nanny for work, he got sick one time under my care and he threw up. And
when you were at the zoo?
Yeah, when I was at the zoo and I was the only person that was taking care with him. It was horrible. But I mean, no one knew why he threw up. He was feeling sick all day. Or like you can tell because he was, you know, he was throwing tantrums all day. But no one knew why. He could have had a bug. He could have had, I don't know, food poisoning or something. Kids get sick from any little reason. But I didn't know why he was sick. And it was so scary for me because it was like a waiting game. It was like, I don't know if I'm going to get it or not. But eventually after like by that night, I kind of accepted the fact that I was exposed. And that's okay. And if I were to get it, I'm going to be okay. It's going to suck. But there's literally nothing that I can do at that point. And it was like the biggest sigh of relief. Like I felt actual freedom for the first time in a long time where I kind of just accepted the fact that it may happen. It may not happen. Who knows? It didn't happen, thankfully. But yeah, I mean, it's easier said than done too. It's so much easier said than done. Did they say that their sibling is sick right now?
Yeah, they said mine have one at the moment. It's so hard.
Yeah. Another thing is also, you know, you have to take the right precautions. No one wants to get the flu or like a stomach bug. So if staying at a friend's house or staying at like someone else's house for a little bit is what makes you be able to actually manage life. Like, you know, if you have to go to work, you have to go to work. And if staying at your grandparents' house or a friend's house is the only way you can get to work, then do that. I mean, do what you need to do to survive. But yeah, you can't get sick from the stomach bug or a flu unless you ingest the virus. Ingest the virus. So wash hands. And that's, you should be good. And also make them stay in the room.
Yeah.
Don't let them come out.
Try to use like a different bathroom or something.
Yeah. But it's honestly just a mind game. But yeah.
And also just remember, just because someone in your house has it, like, yes, you're exposed and yes, you have the possibility of getting it, but it doesn't 100% guarantee that you're going to get it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So
I know some moms who have emetophobia that their kids have gotten sick multiple times and they never got it themselves. Like it's very possible. I was with my sister when she had a stomach bug a couple weeks ago and I never got it myself. It's honestly, it's a game. I swear. A horrible game. Someone said, how can I deal with emetophobia at restaurants? This, is, again, is the hard one for us.
Yeah, I honestly don't really go to restaurants. Every weekend I eat at Panera. I get
Oh, I didn't know that.
Every time. Yeah, I recently started doing it.
I love that.
Like a month ago, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exciting because it's like the only time I eat out. Everything else I make at home. They have like a new broccoli cheddar mac and cheese. It's literally like the mac and cheese and the broccoli cheddar soup in one. Mm-hmm. And it's so good. And like, I was so nervous to get it, even though like there's no meat. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
It's a safe food.
Yeah. But I got it and I love it so much. But other than that, I literally don't eat out. Mainly for that reason. It's just because I'm scared. And if like my boyfriend or like I'm with somebody who goes to a restaurant, sometimes I'll like pick at their food a little bit, but I never order a whole thing. Except this weekend, I think my boyfriend and I are going to Olive Garden because he loves it and he's been craving it. So I kind of want to push myself and get like the fettuccine Alfredo, and I probably will. But
I've had the fettuccine Alfredo before, or actually, I've had it many times at Olive Garden. It's always so good. Okay, yeah. Good. You'll be good.
Yeah, I think. Again, it's just one of those things where it's like you just have to push yourself out of your comfort zone. And even if it's just taking a few bites, I mean, that does a lot. And then the next time you go, you'll feel more confident to have a little more. And also just remember restaurants, they, first of all, everybody there. I mean, Brooke, you can speak on this more, but everybody working in a restaurant, even if you're just a server, I think has to do like the food safety.
Mm-hmm.
certification. And also there's so many guidelines, and like they have inspections and everything at restaurants, especially the bigger chains. So yeah, I know food poisoning is so scary, but it's not that common. Like there's not a high chance that you're gonna get something. And I know like certain foods have higher chances than others. I know a lot of people eat like oysters and they get food poisoning from that all the time, which that sounds disgusting anyways, but I feel like if you just like most of the things at a normal restaurant will be completely fine. Like I said, they have inspections and, you know, they have a lot of rules and regulations, so
yeah,
it'll be okay. And I'm telling myself that too.
Yeah, it's definitely easier said than done, but if you, I don't know, if you continue to remind yourself that it's okay and force yourself to do it. I mean, I've had emetophobia for like 7 years now, and for the first 5 years, I've never was scared of eating at a restaurant. It was completely fine for me up until a couple years ago. It started to affect me eating at restaurants as well. So I've seen both sides of it, but you know, if you've never gotten food poisoning, I mean, no, because I mean, some people have. It's just really rare. It is rare to get food poisoning. I don't know anyone who has gotten it before personally. I've never gotten it before. What I do is, this is a safety blanket, but I check the reviews on Yelp to see if what other people say. And if that is the only way you can go to a restaurant is by checking the reviews, then do it. You know, if you got to do what you got to do. But again, it is a safety blanket. So just because someone got food poisoning 7 years ago at that restaurant doesn't mean you're going to get it seven years later.
I think also like going to like popular restaurants at popular times, you know, like for dinner, they're getting food out so quickly that there's no time for it to like sit and get bad.
Yeah.
Literally. You know, so I think again, if all you can do is like nibble on a few bites of something, then that's great. And that's a step. And that's what I've done. So
yeah, get something simple.
This one says, how to talk to people about your emetophobia and bring it up in a convo without sounding rude.
Ooh.
I don't think it needs to be rude. I mean, well, there's different situations. If someone is like making the gagging noises and it's like they're being annoying about it, you can just, I don't know, tell them to stop.
Yeah, I mean, if someone's doing that, that's just rude on their point. I think at that point you can just be like, dude, get over yourself and have a little bit of an attitude. But I don't think it's rude
telling anyone. Or you could also just be like, that's gross, just stop. Like, yeah, you know.
I think it would be more so embarrassing for me or for other people to tell people, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to bring it up. You don't have to, but you definitely don't have, it doesn't have to be rude. I mean, you can just be like, yeah, I'm scared of throwing up. I don't know. It doesn't have to be like a whole thing. Yeah. I don't really understand what this question's asking.
I guess, I mean,
because I don't know why it has to sound rude.
Yeah. Maybe if, let's say they're like canceling a plan and they don't want it to be rude because of that. I guess in that scenario, you can just be like, hey, I'm just really struggling with my mental health. And then you can kind of explain, like, my mental health is surrounded by
you don't really have to go deeper than that. I mean, and if somebody doesn't understand that and they're not understanding about your mental health, like, I don't know, it doesn't seem like a great friend to me. But
yeah,
I mean, you don't have to explain yourself.
Mm-hmm. But if you want to, I mean, you can just say, like, I struggle with a really debilitating phobia. And it's, I don't know, just explain, like, it's not you or, you know, any, like, I want to hang out with you guys or I want to do so-and-so, but it's just really difficult for me. And I think most people should be pretty understanding of that, and they should understand the struggles with mental health.
Also, you can even say in that, you can be like, it's a super irrational fear. Like, I know it makes no sense, but this is just, like, how my brain is. And I think that helps, like, it helps if you say that it's irrational first,
because
then they won't make some, like, snarky comment about it.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. But yeah, I don't think it's rude. I don't think, unless you're saying, you know, it in a rude way, I guess, I think other people should be understanding. And if they're not understanding, cut them out. Yeah. Yeah. Or unless they're like a coworker or something, but that's on them. That's on them.
Yeah.
Okay, this piggybacks off of this question. Someone said, how do I tell my parents and my friends about my anxiety / how do I talk about my emetophobia? So I know this kind of goes hand in hand with the question Maddie just read, but you can start small. You can just, you know, tell them one day, like, I really struggle with anxiety, and my anxiety is based around a phobia, which is totally normal. Most anxiety is based around a phobia. And then over time, you can just stress it more and more, or you can just sit them down and be like, hey, so I'm really struggling with this phobia. Again, I know it's irrational, but it is kind of taking over my life, and I'm kind of, like, losing hope, or, like, I don't know. I usually do it the first way. I kind of just stress it over time so I don't sound like a weirdo, but...
Yeah, I think it's however you feel comfortable bringing it up. I mean, in some situations, I feel like there's no need to bring it up. But, like, with your parents, like Brooke said, you know, tell them you've been really anxious and, you know, you have a phobia and you're really scared of throwing up. And you can talk about how it affects you and how, like, how you think throughout the day, like, how you think differently on, like, you know, scared of going to school or scared to eat in certain things or whatever it is for you. And I think just being open and honest about it is the best way to handle it.
Yeah. It sucks with parents because some of them just don't understand, especially with the older generation. But, you know, again, another thing that you can do is you can share the Instagram page with them so they understand that a lot of people do have it, and they can, I guess, do their own research on it. Or, you know, you can share some YouTube videos or some websites. So they don't think you're, I don't know, this lonely person who has this weird irrational fear.
Let's see. Oh, this one says, do you know anyone who has OCD and emetophobia and has experience with sertraline, which is medication?
I've never heard of that medication.
I think sertraline is Zoloft.
Yeah, I've tried Zoloft. What was their question? Oh, yeah, it is Zoloft. What is their question again?
Do you know anyone who has OCD and emetophobia and has experience with sertraline?
Do you know anyone with emetophobia and OCD?
I have OCD and emetophobia. And I think a lot of people with emetophobia also have OCD. Because OCD, the stereotype is that it's like you're clean and like things a certain way. But it manifests in different ways. It can also be, I don't know how to explain this.
There's different levels.
OCD and anxiety go hand in hand, and phobias and all that, they go hand in hand, because OCD is obsessive compulsive disorder. And so you obsess over a thought, like you're going to get sick, and then you do compulsive things to try to prevent that. So, like, wash your hands a lot, like overly, excessively wash your hands, or don't eat certain things. It's just the compulsive behaviors you do to prevent your thoughts from coming true.
I did not know that.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So some people with some people with OCD, you know how sometimes they like turn on and off the lights like 5 times or whatever? It's because they'll have a thought in their head. It's like, if you don't do this, you're going to die, or I don't know, something bad's going to happen. So they do it that many times to help with those obsessive thoughts. So I think a lot of us with emetophobia have OCD. Maybe it's not like diagnosed, but they definitely go hand in hand. I don't know personally anybody that takes Zoloft, but I've heard about it, and I work in the healthcare field. So a lot of people do take it and it works well for them. I think with any medication or any anxiety medication, it works differently for everybody. So you kind of just have to try it. And some people have to try multiple medicines before they find something that works good for them. I'm sure if your doctor is prescribing it to you, it'll work great for your OCD and emetophobia and other anxieties. But if you're worried about the side effects, honestly, I would recommend what I did. I just started super, super tiny with the sliver, even if it's not going to do anything. It just helps you get into the habit of taking it and being more comfortable with taking it. And then slowly over time, increasing your dose.
Yeah. I took Zoloft for a little bit when I first realized that I had anxiety. I took I took a lot of different medications trying to find the right one, obviously at different times, but Zoloft was one of them. I feel like Zoloft or whatever the other word is, stirred, whatever.
Sertraline.
I probably said that wrong. Anyway, I think that's like one of the most common antidepressants that people take.
I feel like Zoloft and Lexapro are the most common.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about Zoloft, but I don't know, it didn't really work for me. I probably didn't even give it a fair chance, honestly. But I would highly recommend taking it and trying it out.
Yeah.
Especially also, if your doctor recommends it.
Keep in mind that those medications take at least 6 weeks for you to even realize any difference. Yeah. So
give it a fair shot.
Pushing through, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I like this question. How can you help someone with emetophobia? So, like, how can you help someone, let's say someone follows the page because they have a good friend or their partner or their child struggles with this fear. So how does your dad help you with your emetophobia or Nick?
I think the biggest thing that the people around me, my mom, my dad, my boyfriend, struggle with the most is not being able to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And not being able to like take the fear away from me, because I mean, they care about me and they want nothing more than to me not have this fear anymore.
Yeah.
But I think you have to accept the fact that you can't just do that, and like that sucks. But I think the biggest thing, the most important thing, is you give them the support that they need.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to them, even if it sounds so stupid to you, so irrational, so crazy. That is, brains are crazy. Our brains are crazy, and they will make up scenarios, and somebody will believe this made up scenario is like completely gonna happen. But yeah, just be supportive. Let them know that you're there for them. Listen to them. I know you'll never like fully understand what they're going through, but I feel like the biggest thing anybody needs in life, emetophobia or not, is just support.
Mm-hmm.
And a support system. So I think being that for them, asking them how you can help them, that's really helpful. And then also pushing them a little bit.
Yes. Yes.
Not too much, but pushing them a little bit to get out of their comfort zone. And while they're doing that thing that's out of their comfort zone, you being right there with them, helping them get through that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's love and support and a little bit of push.
Yeah. I think you worded all of that perfectly. I think a lot of people who have someone close to them that struggles with emetophobia, I think it's easy for them to beat themselves up for it, especially if it's like a mom versus daughter, mom mm-hmm. versus son or whatever, because I guess you can take the blame for it or like, you know, beat yourself up for it, but it has nothing really to do with you. And a lot of us just want that support. And if you give that support to your child or your partner, they will be extremely thankful for that. Another thing that I want to mention is a lot of us kind of, I don't know, like we get really close to one specific person and that's like our safe person, I guess you can say. Mm-hmm. Like for me, my mom, like I have a partner, I have a very loving partner, but my mom is my safe person, if that makes sense. So we kind of attach ourselves to those people, and I don't know, I know my mom will always be there for me. I know she'll try her best to be there for me in any way she can be. And that's all we need, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I know no matter what happens, even if I do get sick, I know she's going to be by my side or at least like a phone call away.
Yeah, I think also doing research.
Yeah, learning about
emetophobia. The Emetophobia Manual is a really good book. And it's geared towards people with emetophobia and helping them understand their phobia and, you know, trying to get over it. But it'll help you
understand
what's going through that person's head. Yeah, I think we all just need a good support system. And the last thing I wanted to say about this is how do I word this? The person with the emetophobia is going to be annoying about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when they're panicking and they fully believe they're going to throw up, if they're nauseous, they're going to be annoying. They're going to want a lot of reassurance. They're going to you know, I understand it can be annoying and a lot. But again, just being there for them, reassuring them any way you can. But reassuring them doesn't mean saying you're not going to throw up. You're going to, you know, you're not going to throw up. It's also just saying you're going to be okay no matter what happens. And I'm going to be right here with you.
Yeah.
That's no matter what happens. Hear.
Yeah. And we'll make it through this.
Yeah.
You're going to be okay. Tomorrow you're going to feel better. Whatever. Yada, yada, yada. And you'll get through anything and I'll be by your side. That's literally all we kind of want to hear, pretty much.
We just want someone to go through it with us.
Yeah. It's lonely. It's a lonely
thing. Yeah, it is. All right. This question is more geared towards you, Brooke, but emetophobia when working with young children, for example, schools. And then it says they are sick on floor.
Oh, like if they, for example,
if they throw up.
I don't even know. I don't work in daycares or elementary schools for a reason because
but
it's
work with like small children.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like if you have a job like that, it's more than just a job. I think it's more so you being passionate about developmental skills, I guess. And you kind of just continue or you kind of have to continue to look at that bigger picture. If you work in like a daycare or an elementary school, kids are going to be sick all the time. And then you also have to remember that kids get sick over the smallest reasons. Kids can get a cold and be sick from that, or like throw up from that.
They can cough too hard. They can laugh too hard. Yeah. They can cry too hard.
Like, and get sick for any reason.
Yeah. They can run too hard.
Run too hard. Throw up. Yeah. But again, it's like just because they're sick or someone is sick in the daycare or the elementary school or something doesn't mean we will get sick. And also, you know, if you if someone does get sick, throw one of your coworkers to clean them up and take care of them.
That's what I would do.
I 100%. I don't know. I would just, even if you're like
a nurse.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people would kind of understand that too. I feel like, you know, if I was working at an elementary school and I was like the primary teacher in the room, I would just call the nurse and they would, or the janitor, they'd come clean it up.
Yeah. Don't schools have janitors that clean that stuff up?
Yeah. I don't know. Have them do it.
I think another thing is, I think it's important to teach young children the importance of hand washing.
Mm-hmm.
And so implementing that in your class before snack time, before lunch, when you get back from recess, not overly, like not too much, but, you know, after they go to the bathroom, I think it's just really important to implement that in small children.
Yeah, I did a...
Because they're gross.
Yeah, they are. They spread germs like wildfire. But yeah. I did an experiment. I think I talked about this before in college a couple years ago. And I had one daycare that was washing their hands very frequently before they eat food, after recess, yada, yada, yada. And then I had another daycare that was just like a normal daycare. And I saw a huge difference in both daycares. One daycare, the one who wasn't washing their hands, was getting sick. Sickness was just flying around, and then the other school, they just really got sick because they were just taking the right precautions. It's hard to get elementary schools or daycare, whatever, toddlers to, you know, wash hands, but just start that routine with them, I guess.
Yeah.
So a few people had questions about flying and road trips and traveling, I guess, you know, all of that sort of stuff. Someone said, I'm due to fly in June and I'm absolutely terrified. Someone else said, I have a road trip coming up in a couple of days and that's the hardest thing for them. Any advice on that? So here you can start because I'd have to think about this for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we have a whole episode that we did on traveling. So definitely go listen to that if you're struggling. I don't remember what we talked about in there.
I don't either.
But it'll probably be similar to what we're about to say.
Yeah.
First thing, flying. I went on my first plane ever since my emetophobia last year, in May of last year, and I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified, and it was more, I wasn't as scared when I was on the plane. It was like the lead up, and I think Brooke and I have talked about this, and we can both agree, the thought and the anticipation and the lead up is the worst part.
By far.
What I did is... first of all, I packed in advance. Like, I didn't pack last minute. And that helped ease my anxiety. I, in my on my little personal carry-on. I brought a backpack with me. And in that I had gum, I had my anxiety medication, my nausea medication, I had some snacks. Bring things that help you when you're anxious. Uh-huh. If you like to color when you're anxious, bring a coloring book. If you like to read when you're anxious, then read. Like if you like to listen to music, bring some headphones. Just try to make it as comfortable as possible.
Uh-huh.
I think when you're actually on the plane, you'll be okay.
Yeah.
I feel like you'll be so in the moment. Everything will go great, and I think you'll be okay.
You don't even kind of realize you're on a plane when you're on a plane. If you have headphones in and you're watching something, I don't know. I get like a huge serotonin boost when I'm on a plane. Yeah. So it's like, dang, I'm really doing this, and I feel good. Like, mm-hmm. I can conquer the world.
And something else you can do too, you can bring a little packet of like disinfectant wipes and like wipe down the seat before you sit down. After you do it, you'll be so proud of yourself.
Yeah.
And it'll give you so much, not inspiration.
It'll give you so much power over yourself again.
Yeah.
You'll gain so much
yeah.
power in your mind.
You'll just feel so good.
Yeah. And the same with road trips. I mean, it's literally the same. And if you, you know, if you are feeling anxious, you know, try and sit in the front seat. Or if you're old enough to drive, try and drive for a little bit. If you're not old enough, ask to just pull over and take a little breath. Or, you know, if that's too much, ask to go to the bathroom.
Roll the window down. Some fresh air. Again, just try to bring things that make you feel more comfortable.
Yeah.
Comfortable. And that's kind of all you can do, but I promise you'll be so proud of yourself once you do it.
And you'll get through it no matter what. It will be fine. It'll be just fine.
Someone said how to cope with symptoms of anorexia and emetophobia. I think
this one, okay, I've never dealt with really eating problems other than just not wanting to eat certain stuff. So this is all on you.
Yeah. I mean, I've shared my story a million times. I was in the hospital for 2 weeks because I wasn't eating and I was like malnourished. It was really affecting my brain and my heart and, you know, my organs. And I feel like I'm constantly trying to get better. I mean, if you are at the point where you feel like you can't eat anything and you're scared of everything and you're just not eating, find one or two things that you're comfortable eating, whether it's a bagel, whether it's toast. Like for a while, I was literally eating toast with butter every day. And that's like all I was eating. If it's that bad, eating something is better than nothing. If it's unhealthy, eat it. If it's just get food in your stomach. It's really hard. I try to get a therapist if you can. But I think my biggest advice is just eating something is better than nothing. And whatever you feel like you can eat, eat it.
Mm-hmm. I've never struggled with that, but thankfully, but on days that I am struggling to eat because of my emetophobia, literally a piece of toast is good enough. Do what you can do to just get food in your stomach.
Yeah. I also want to clarify, I know that this person means like not being able to eat and like losing weight, but the term for us people with emetophobia or people that are scared to eat certain things and it doesn't pertain to the weight loss or the weight gain of food, it's ARFID. It's avoidant restrictive food mm-hmm. disorder. And I think we've talked about this too, but
I remember anorexia, talking about that.
Anorexia and those things, those pertain to like being scared of gaining weight, which is a thing. And, you know, if you're experiencing that, then I'm sorry. And I've never experienced it, so it's hard to talk about.
Yeah, I honestly didn't even know what anorexia was really, other than that I know it just means people don't really eat. But yeah, I just looked it up. It's when you obsess about not wanting to gain weight and not wanting to eat because you don't want to put on weight. But yeah, I think that is important. You know, if you are someone who doesn't struggle with that definition that we just said, I think it is important to look into exactly what you are struggling with so you can get the right help and the right treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't,
if you go to a therapist and you tell them that you're anorexic, like that, there's going to be a whole different path of treatment
yeah.
than somebody who's not eating because they're scared of throwing up.
Yeah.
Both equally valid for them, both equally important,
mm-hmm.
But just, they're just different.
They're different, yeah. I didn't know that. That's good to know, honestly, for people who ever say anything.
Yeah.
Okay, so someone said they have a dentist appointment tomorrow, which is today. So it's, I mean, whatever advice we give them now, it's too late. But they're afraid to gag and they cried last time they were there. I think this can help for, I guess, anyone else who goes to the dentist. But do you get scared to go to the dentist for your emetophobia?
No, I just don't like the dentist.
Yeah, same here.
I didn't go for like 3 years when COVID happened.
Yeah,
me too. And I finally went last year. And I was kind of nervous, but, like, I knew I was going to be okay.
Yeah.
But I was just more like, ugh, I don't want to go to the dentist.
Yeah.
Luckily, somehow, my teeth are fine.
Same here.
I don't know. I feel like it's kind of the same thing as, like, you just feel trapped.
They're working inside your mouth.
Yeah, so that's scary, but...
Yeah. I mean, some people have a really, really bad gag reflex, I guess. And maybe, like, with the water squirting in their mouth, it may make them...
The only thing that's ever made me gag is, like, when I got my braces on or retainer and they had to do, like, the tooth impressions.
I've heard about that. I've heard some horror stories about that.
That makes me feel like I'm gonna gag. But, like, just getting your teeth cleaned.
Like a checkup or something?
They're just brushing your teeth.
Yeah. And if you, you know, if you are worried about it, definitely mention to your dentist ahead of time that you're worried about it and they can possibly take... Or possibly, I guess, be more understanding with the procedure and, or yeah, the procedure.
Take some breaks.
Yeah. Or help you out and talk, I guess, run you through everything that they're doing while they're doing it or something. I don't know.
Yeah. My boyfriend's mom is a dental hygienist. So she, like, does that for a living. And I can tell you right now that there are so many people that have, like, full-blown panic attacks about going to the dentist. Not just, like, emetophobia, but, I don't know, a lot of people are scared of the dentist. So if you tell them, you don't even have to tell them about your emetophobia, but you can just tell them that you're really anxious, and I'm sure they've dealt with it before, and I'm sure they know how to deal with it. They can, like Brooke said, tell you what they're doing before they do it, maybe take some breaks.
Yeah.
I just think it's always important to tell people, let people know if you're anxious so that they can do whatever they can to help you.
Yeah. Also, I just remembered something. When I was growing up, I used to be petrified, absolutely petrified of... gargling with mouthwash or something. And I remember going to the dentist, and I mean, like, I thought I was gonna die if I would have to mouthwash, and my dentist just didn't do it for me. Like, I got to the point where they just gave up and I never mouthwashed with them. So they could skip a step if it really, like, if it's really, really freaking you out, just have them skip that step. I mean, it's your teeth. They'll do what you say, and it's, yeah, for your own benefit.
They can't make you do anything. But I think, like, if you're just going in for a normal cleaning, I would just think about it as, like, literally what they're going to do. They're going to look at your teeth, put a little mirror in your mouth. They're going to look at your teeth. They're going to scrape off any plaque you have. That's the worst part for me. It's like nails on a chalkboard.
And the sound.
Anyways, but it, like, they're going to be up by your teeth, not back, like, in your throat. And then they're going to brush your teeth, which is, like, the same as when you do it, except they just go in and do, like, each tooth individually, and then they're going to floss.
Yeah.
And then you're done.
Yeah. Mine put a little white or, like, a little tape.
Fluoride.
Yeah, I hate that stuff.
I say no to that because I don't like it.
That's smart. Yeah, see, they can literally do whatever you tell them to do.
Yeah. I remember as a kid, though, I had to get it. My mom made me, and I hated it.
Yeah, I hate that stuff, and it stays on, like, all day.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get that, but yeah, you'll be okay.
Yeah.
So the last question / advice thing we have, someone said, I'm moving away in a few months and living by myself, and I'm scared I'm going to get the flu.
So I live by myself, or I moved out of my parents' house, and I live with a roommate right now. And I've been living outside of my parents' house for, like, I don't know, like a year now, maybe. And it is really scary at first, especially because it's such a huge change. But my biggest tip would be to make your new place your comfort area. And honestly, I feel like it's kind of easy to do that. I mean, at least for me it is. But make your room, the room that you're staying in, your comfort area, and make it personal to you. If you ever feel anxious, remind yourself you can go back to that area. You can call your mom. You can lay in bed. That's your safe area. And I don't know, I guess it's more so the anticipation of moving, I think so. Or at least that's how it was for me.
Yeah, I mean, just remember that the people that you had in your, that you had to go to before, they can still be there for you, even if it's like on the phone. Make your space comfortable. And it might take a little bit of time to like have your place feel like home, but it will. Mm-hmm. And bring your things, make it how you like it, have fun decorating, and it'll get easier. It'll definitely be hard at first, but I think it'll get easier. But yeah,
it's a huge step. I mean, towards the right direction. It is a huge step towards adulting. So think of it as a positive, even though it's really scary, think of it as a huge positive thing. You get this ultimate freedom. You get, I don't know, to do whatever you want. You get to design your own space.
Yeah. And I think that's also, I mean, that it, within itself is a part of exposure therapy. I mean, you're doing something that you're really uncomfortable with. Mm-hmm. And once you get through it, you're going to be feel so much more confident
in
yourself.
You may have a couple nights or maybe even like a couple weeks of really, really bad nights where you're crying, panicking, whatever. But they'll eventually end and you will love your space eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty much everything.
This was kind of a long episode today.
I know. It was a longer episode. We kind of wanted to just go over what everyone said so we can...
Yeah, hopefully we answered all your guys' questions.
Yeah, and if we missed any or if you have any other advice that you didn't get to ask, we try and answer a lot of the DMs. We do get a lot of DMs. So, you know, again, I say this all the time, but if we don't answer, just DM again. So it'll
go back
up. To the top. Yeah. But yeah, I think that's everything I want to talk about.
Yeah, we should have a guest on next episode, so
super excited for that. Yeah.
I think our plan right now is to do a guest every other episode so that Brooke and I can still have, you know, our topics that we talk about, but we can also bring some other people on as well. So
go in depth with certain topics without having to, like, talk to someone else about all of that. All right, well, we will talk to you guys next Sunday, and I hope everyone has a good week. And a good Monday. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.